This is the Transcend Human Podcast, a show dedicated to the spirituality and psychology of the human condition. This year, however, we're taking a detour together as I venture into the world of writing. Each episode documents my journey from the big idea to a complete fiction novel. Join me through the highs and the lows that are sure to be part of this creative process. All right, friends, we are back. Welcome to the Transcend Human Podcast and the Transcendent Trilogy Series. It is June 10th, 2024, so glad to have you back. I thought this time we would just do a quick life update. So back when I was doing more traditional episodes last year, I would every once in a while I'd just kind of give you an update on how things have been going, how life has been. So I figured I'd do that again, just to keep people up to date. So we recently went to New York City for our middle daughter's graduation. So that is over and done with. We are back and kind of easing back into our normal routine, if there is ever a normal routine. Although it's not going to last long, right? Because the school year just wrapped up. So summer is officially here, which means that we'll probably have more interaction with our adult children coming in and out of the house, that sort of thing. So it's a good problem to have. And I only say problem because if you're like me, you tend to thrive on routine and predictability. So obviously that's not the case when you have kids coming and going out of the house. But like I said, it's a good problem because you want your kids around. You want them to be here. You want to be able to do things with them, that sort of thing. So when it comes to my writing, obviously, I've started working on my first draft. And so it takes a certain level of routine and focus and kind of a consistent methodical approach in order to knock things like this out. And so that's always been the struggle for me. And I'm sure it'll continue this summer as I try to figure out how to add in a very methodical writing regimen to the normal craziness that goes on during the summer. So more about that later. Those of you who've been around a while also know that Tammy and I are foster parents. So we were approved for fostering in Orange County. And since then, you know, we had one kid that lasted about 3 or 4 months. Then we moved to Riverside County. And it's literally taken this long for us to have our foster license transferred from one county to the other. This is why there are so many problems with the foster community, I guess you'd call it, right? The foster, I don't want to call it the fostering industry because it's not an industry. It's a thing. It's a government agency. And it has always struggled, you know, to be a system that works smoothly, that sort of thing. And this is just another example of that. So we finally got approved here in Riverside County. They sent us a little certification, a little notification, hey, you've been approved, all that kind of stuff. And so it's been a few weeks now, if not a month, and still nothing, literally no movement. So we're really not sure why it's taking so long for all of these things to go through, why they haven't started reaching out, you know, with cases for us to look over. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. So that is still a thing. And last but not least, our kids, our three adult children, have decided they want to go to London together on a short vacation. So kind of crazy. Tammy and I are both really stoked for them to do that. But at the same time, it's kind of strange seeing your kids doing such grown-up things, right? I mean, they're adults, but very new adults. And we love them for that. But it's, at the same time, there's just this weird, like, maybe it's jealousy. I don't know. You know, when I think back to what I was doing at their age, I wasn't taking trips to London. Heck no. You know, there's just so many other things that we had going on at the time. And I don't think any of us had the money to just jump on a plane and fly to London. So that's great. It's great that they get to do that. I hope they have an amazing time. I think that's going to be mid to later summer. So there's that. Aside from that, I don't know that there's a really big amount of things going on. There was a lot of back and forth to New York City with Rachel being in school. With her now being out of school, she and her roommate have decided to live there for the next year to kind of test the waters and see how things go, auditioning for Broadway musicals, things like that. So I'm not really sure the next time that we will head that direction. But then there's also things going on with our first child, our oldest daughter. She is going to start law school in the fall in New York City. So there's that. You know, we will be probably making trips out there to help her move. And then after that, who knows? If we can just convince our son to go to school in New York, we will have all three of our kids in New York. But I don't see that happening. Tyler has one more year of community college, and then he'll have to start making those decisions. So, all right, that's it for the update. Today's topic, here we go. Chapter one, no more books on story structure. Chapter two, just start writing already. And chapter three, where I landed on my plotting and outlining. Chapter one, no more books on story structure. So I'm officially done with The Story Genius by Lisa Krohn. Great book, made me think, but also, as we've talked about, it kind of threw me into a tailspin of sorts. We talked about how I had that conversation with my friend Mike, where he basically called me out on my fascination, or possibly my procrastination, with story structure and books and podcasts. And like I said, he was right. I was in a rut. I was kind of in this circular pattern of research, and just, you know, study the craft that I want so badly to understand and be part of. But I really didn't enter the field of writing, you know, the way most people do. And that maybe that's part of the problem, right? I'm not an English major or a literature major, copywriting, editing, any of that. I never had a class in story or story structure. And for a long time, I wasn't even a really big reader. I mean, I would default to watching movies any day of the week. But movies are still a great way to study story, but nothing beats reading great novels, right? And learning how to write from those who get it and do it so well. But that's really no excuse, because what I was really doing in my researching and studying, I was just looking for a silver bullet. I wanted to find a book or a theory or a methodology that literally told me exactly what to do and how to do it. I wanted a step-by-step process that I could follow so that it would minimize the risk and maximize the potential for success. Then again, isn't that something we all want? But that's where I was getting stuck, because I found what I was looking for. I just found it over and over again. Slightly different, right? Slightly different variations, slightly different recommendations, and at times with incompatible recommendations. That's when the confusion really sets in, right? Because you can't reconcile the things that you're reading. You have all this knowledge, and yet it's like a massive dust cloud swirling around your head, and you can't really make sense of it. There's no patterns that you can decipher, just random ideas that don't seem to fit together nicely. If you really want to exacerbate the problem, just spend some time on YouTube watching videos and shorts by random authors. You'll get a lot of great ideas, but each one feels segmented or fragmented from the whole silver bullet thing I was trying to find. So that's where I was living until a few weeks ago. Chapter two, just start writing already. So in the midst of all that circular routine, I took Mike's advice, I finished my last book, and I made the decision to be done with reading about writing. I would just start writing again. Now, I'll explain how this impacted my plotting and my current outline as we get to the last chapter, but I wanted to start with this. The simple fact that I started writing, right? Hence the name of this episode, Here We Go. Because that's big. Right? This is huge. There's just something magical about being back in the saddle writing again. back in the weeds with words and sentences and ideas and beats and concepts, weaving them all together and seeing your story come to life. For me, this wouldn't be opening a notebook to a blank page. I would need to start writing again in stages because I already have 4 to 5 chapters of written content. Of course, these were written a really long time ago, before I had even read the book Story Grid by Sean Coyne. So I knew that I could use the previous work, but it would require a serious rewrite in order to ensure that I was being true to things like the 5 commandments of storytelling, creating sequences, something that probably made sense intuitively, but not really something that I had top of mind when I was writing those original chapters. So I also knew that I wanted to employ the prologue concept. So for each of the 3 books that I'm going to write in this trilogy, I want to have a prologue that kind of goes back and describes some event from a long time ago. So this is one of my ideas. However, in the 4 to 5 chapters that I had originally wrote, I just started with chapter 1. So I would need to take some of that, change it up so that the first few scenes could be the prologue. Once the prologue is written, then I would need to look over the rest of my work and try to clump pieces of chapters into sequences that make sense. So what I did is I made a backup of my original work, and then I went to town on the new file. I copied, I pasted, and before long, the content started to take shape. I had a prologue made up of 2 scenes, then I had 2 scenes set aside for the alpha protagonist, one that documented the ordinary world, the world of common day, and then one that held the inciting incident for the entire trilogy. That sequence will be pretty important, right? And it may grow into more scenes over time, but for now, I have 2 of the core scenes that need to be in that sequence. Next up is a sequence of about 3 scenes that document my second group of characters. So this group has a protagonist and a set of supporting characters that will be on a separate but connected quest for the bulk of the trilogy. After that, we go back to the alpha protagonist for a four scene sequence. Then there's a standalone scene that kind of documents the world and the government of the world that we're talking about, in kind of a coalescing of forces in the world. Then we're back to group 1 for a scene, then to group 2 for 4 scenes, and finally a sequence of 2 scenes where group 1 faces the climax to act 1. If I write an average of, let's say, 2,000 words a scene, we're looking at about 38,000 words. Project this out, and my first draft should be around 152,000 words. So it's a little on the high side, even for like a fantasy or high fantasy novel. But I've always heard that more is better. You can always cut back, you can always tweak scenes, you can always cut things out. But that's the plan, to have more than enough so you can always scale back to something that's a little bit more concentrated. So all of this, like when I look back, all of this really took about a week, maybe a little more than a week. The restructuring, getting my file set up the way I wanted it, and then sitting down to write. And I sat there for a few minutes staring at my original chapter before diving in. The first day, I worked on it for probably about 3 hours, and I got 4 paragraphs rewritten. The next day, I worked through another probably 6 to 8 paragraphs, and then by the end of the 3rd day, I had a complete scene finished, scene 1 of the prologue. I can't tell you how good it felt as I typed the last sentence and added that final period to finish it off. All those writing feelings came rushing back, along with the motivation and the desire to continue. So this is where I'm at right now. I just finished my first scene, and here's my roadmap for completing act 1, the beginning hook. Next up is to complete scene 2 of the prologue. Then I'll use my previous content to flesh out the next, let's say, 2 to 3 scenes for group 1 and group 2. And this is going to be a little difficult because I already have content, direction, and detail in place for these 2 groups, but it just isn't in the right format, right? Each of them is written into massive chapters that have way many more words than need to be, but they really need to be broken into scenes that are more bite size. So I'll need to do all that. Then I'll need to pull each of the scenes into scenes that reflect the five commandments of storytelling. And each scene will need to have an ending that suggests two things. First, momentum, or what we call narrative drive, basically the energy that keeps the story moving and keeps the reader turning pages. And second, from Story Genius, is the and so element. In other words, the scene happened, and so this must happen next. It's really the impact that the protagonist has from the previous scene, right? So the choice the protagonist made in the previous scene will kind of dictate what their next move is, what they will do because of that scene. So once those scenes are written, I finally reach the blank page in the document, right? Once I get through all that original content that I wrote so many years ago, I get to the point where it is a blank page, right? And this is where it's going to really feel like you're writing again, because you'll be creating from scratch the way that I did way back when I started working on the book. And from there, there is no plan. It's just write until I'm done with my first draft. Chapter 3, where I landed on my plotting and outlining. So this is something I brought up in the last episode, basically how I started the Story Genius book believing one thing, and then I was confronted with the content that suggested my original belief was wrong. That was the premise behind the internal versus external storyline episode that I did. But I think I've put my confusion to rest. I still believe you can write a story that is completely built on an external storyline. And I think the first 20 James Bond movies and the TV show Reacher, among others, kind of helped prove my point. Now, people may disagree with me. They may say, no, those movies and television shows aren't real. They're not real stories. And they don't hold a candle to stories that were built with strong internal storylines. And to this point, I guess we'll just have to agree to disagree. But what I did take away from the book was that a story with a strong internal storyline will definitely connect with readers in a way that the external cannot. And that's why they pack such a punch. When it comes to the 007 movies, I would rewatch the ones with Daniel Craig 10 times more often than I would watch an older one. Why? Well, most likely because Daniel Craig has an internal struggle throughout the movies, one that kind of tears at your heart and keeps you wondering. Sure, it still has the chases, the close calls, the explosions, the backstabbing, the double agents, the gadgets, the women, and the great villains. But at the end of the day, it also has the internal storyline, which means more bang for the buck. I guess what I'm getting at is that I don't see internal versus external in terms of right versus wrong. I see both as right, but when combined, maybe even writer, though I know that's not a word. So having this new knowledge, I went back to my global spreadsheet to see what the damage would be if I incorporated some of my new findings. As it turns out, I only made a few small changes. In this massive global document, I've already developed the scenes for Act 1, and each scene has the following information. An alpha point from Story Genius. It's basically the reason for the scene. Next, each scene will have a subplot, like a row for the subplots, in case the scene moves the additional plots forward. This also came from Story Genius. Next, there is a full description for each scene. Then there's a row for each of the five commandments of storytelling, so that I can summarize each with a phrase or a short sentence. Obviously, this came from StoryGrid. Next, I added a specific row just for the turning point. Now, in the StoryGrid five commandment structure, the turning point is simply part of the progressive complication number, right? It's your inciting incident, and then it's progressive complications and turning point kind of together as one. But I kind of broke those apart because I feel like it's easier, or it's more important for me to really document what the turning point is in the scene. And then I can also list in a separate row some of the progressive complications that keep moving the person toward that turning point. Let's see what's next. I added a row for the value shift that takes place in the scene. So this is just a simple phrase like innocence to understanding or safety to peril. So you're basically just showing that there's this value shift that takes place from the beginning to the end of that scene. This is something that I learned from StoryGrid as well. And then finally, there's a rope for what's called value polarity for each scene. So this is the polarity that shifts from the beginning of the scene to the end of the scene. So when you look at your protagonist in terms of what happened in the scene, did this scene go from negative to positive or from positive to negative? So for each scene, I'm able to see that polarity and determine, you know, how that plays out in the overall story. So this is also from StoryGrid. And really, when it comes to polarity, the recommendation is that your scenes shift back and forth between positive to negative and negative to positive. In other words, you don't want to start every single scene in a negative space and end at a positive space. It doesn't really make sense, right? So if you have your protagonist in a really bad place and then you end the scene with something really good, it's better for them to go into the next scene kind of on this high and then have that taken away from them to a negative rather than negative to positive. And then the minute you start your next scene, oh, we're back to negative again, right? It feels a little more choppy. So that's just something to kind of document as you go, and kind of, it just helps you see how you're writing and see that you're kind of in a good rhythm. All right, so there you go. Actually, not so fast. If you're paying attention, you recognize that there isn't a row for internal storyline. So how am I going to start tracking that throughout the story? Great question, and one that I'm actually still trying to figure out. If you remember from the last episode, Lisa Krohn uses scene cards in her world. So on the top of the card, there were there's some information like, you know, the the action point or the alpha point of the scene, and then you've got your subplots, and then you have these four quadrants. The top two are related to the external plot, so the cause and the effect. Then on the bottom, there were two cells for the internal storyline, or the third rail. She breaks it down into why it matters, which is basically why what happens in the first half of your scene matters to your protagonist, given their agenda. And then the second cell is the realization, which is basically the internal change to the protagonist or the character in the scene. The realization typically requires a change in plan. The protagonist's next move is typically a reaction to the previous realization. So this is the piece that I'm missing. And I'm still trying to determine, you know, how to flesh that out or where it lives. I could basically add it to my global spreadsheet as a couple of rows, or I could create a completely separate document where I begin creating the internal storyline for each character, sort of like world building almost. And then once completed, I could keep referring back to that document to make sure that over the four sections of the book, the character is moving bit by bit toward that final piece that I want to put into place, or that final change that I want to see in my character. So, like I said, we'll have to see where that goes. But my assumption is I'll probably add a couple of rows to the global spreadsheet and try to track it there. So just so that everything is in one place. All right, let's land the plane. So there you go. This has been a fun one, not only because I got to announce that I have officially started writing again, but also because I was able to work through some of my issues on a live microphone, right? I found a way to use StoryGrid and the principles from Story Genius in a way that I think is compatible. I mean, I really enjoyed reading about both methodologies, and I feel like it's kind of the best of both worlds. And I think one thing I learned in reading Story Genius is that StoryGrid does talk a lot about value shifts and changes in your characters. I probably just didn't read enough about that in StoryGrid to really understand how important it was. When I first started reading StoryGrid, to me, it was all about the external story and plotting it out and using the five commandments of storytelling and making sure that if you're telling an action story, you're using the right conventions and obligatory moments and all of those sorts of things. And so I didn't really spend a lot of time reading the content that they had on characters and the protagonist and internal change. So I think the Story Genius book just opened me up to that concept. And then now as I go back and look at StoryGrid, I start hearing that more in the podcast episodes and the YouTube videos. I'm starting to hear more of that coming through as they talk about StoryGrid, but I think I just discounted it at the beginning. So that's why I love, like I said, I love both methodologies, and I think combining the two of them has just made it the best of both worlds. Next up, finish scene 2 from my prologue, and probably more. So thanks for hanging out with me again today. I cannot wait to get back with you in a few weeks to update you on the progress. I hope that whatever you're working on, whatever creative pursuit that you are undertaking, that everything is falling in line for you. But more importantly, I hope it's bringing you joy. The simple act of creating, of taking your next step in your work in progress, or what we call your WIP. It's so funny. It just reminded me of this coffee place we go to in Costa Mesa. It's a coffee place called WIP, and it stands for work in progress, but I don't think I ever really made that connection. And now that I have, I just love it even more. It's a coffee shop for people who are working on their works in progress. So there you go. I think that's it, folks, from the Left Coast, also known as the Best Coast. Though I will most certainly deny making that claim if confronted on it. Have a great week, everyone. And as always, keep transcending humans.